Hello everyone, and welcome to Women in Jazz Media at the London Jazz Festival 2022. I'm Isabel Marquez, Women in Jazz Media's official reporter for the festival, and I will be bringing you interviews with all the musicians as well as performance sneak peeks. From the 17th to the 20th, we have events going on every day at Toulouse-Lautrec and Jazz Café Posque. We have so many exciting performances, workshops and networking events going on, and I can't wait to take you all on the journey with me. The first night, we had the incredible Migdalia van der Hoven Quartet performing their newest music to an audience for the first time. Named Mexico's Woman of the Year, Migdalia van der Hoven is known for her versatility when travelling across the jazz genre, with added groove and style. With over 25 years of experience, her long list of achievements is astounding, and I had the pleasure of speaking to her before the gig. Firstly, how are you feeling about being here?
I feel so excited, just like I felt last year. We've been looking forward to this the whole year. We have like new music today coming out for the first time. So we're super, super excited that it is such a nice opportunity to do it at the London Jazz Festival. So.
And that's your album, Point?
It's called Point of Departure.
And what kind of music, what kind of style
is it? It's jazz fusion, proper, and sort of West Coast style. And it has a lot of tempo changes and time signatures and odd time signatures, and it's crazy, but it's also really nice to listen to and also to play it, so
yeah. Do you have one that you love performing the most?
I don't love performing. I do, but they're all very challenging, so I do enjoy the whole all of them. I think that actually my favorite would be the most difficult, which is Point of Departure, so.
Yeah.
And we're actually closing with that one, so.
And what was, what influenced that?
Well, the whole album is about sort of locations, geography and movement, it has a lot of elements of, south. We included Girl Facing South, Point of Departure. We have one that's called PCH, which is the highway in California, it takes you around the coast. Mm-hmm. So it's all about places, locations, movement that means a lot to us, and that has certain way of just taking you into a journey, different styles of music, and then just ending, and what's a tune called Home,
So obviously you were at the festival last year. What has changed for you in the last year?
Well, the music itself, last year we played our originals, we played a lot of covers, and tonight we're playing most of the music, it's original music. We obviously have the album coming out now. We had an EP last year only, and also the fact that, it's the second time that I play it, the second time I represent my country, I haven't heard any other Mexican playing, so to me it's important.
Have you been back to Mexico?
I won an award just for, part of it was just for my work that I'm doing here in the UK, but a big part of that was the London Jazz Festival, being the first female musician to ever perform, in a festival like this. They gave me an award in Mexico, just recognizing that, effort. So it means a lot of things, tonight.
And how does it feel to be alongside Women in Jazz Media?
Well, it's always home, and I cannot thank them enough, for always considering us for the opportunity and for all the amazing work that they do with women, just giving the platform and the opportunity, to perform in festivals like these and other places, just having, that space secure, for women and female players, to have a chance, to be on stage. So.
Wow. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I hope that you have the best performance. Friday night slot was an incredible celebration of the younger generations, changing the jazz scene one step at a time. Ivor Novello Rising Star nominee and Women in Jazz Media team member, Ashanee White, took to the stage alongside her supporting act, Sam Dosha, with a refreshing and individual take on the jazz genre. Her skillful genre combinations have led to a new and unique hybrid, what she likes to call grunge soul. Before her debut festival performance, she chatted to me about going from backstage to onstage and what it meant for her and her career.
So, how does it feel to be here at the festival and not working like backstage? Because I know...
Oh my gosh. It's crazy because last year, I can't believe it's been a year, one, since I was working with the festival. I actually really enjoy both parts of it because I love like taking care of artists. Like, as an artist myself, I know how important it is to have somebody that's like happy and smiley and can get you shit, like get you stuff that, you know, you need in a good manner. But it also feels good to be able to rehearse the band and showcase, you know, the whole time I was like, planning the festival, itching like, oh my god, I know what I would do when I'm here. So it does feel amazing.
It's like my time to shine.
Yeah, but in a nice way, like not too much of like a it's my time to shine kind of diva moment. More
no,
just it's like
I can't. Debut. Yeah, festival. It's amazing.
Yeah, it feels really good to be here. Appreciate it.
Can you tell me a bit about like the music you're playing tonight?
Yeah, I call it grunge soul. So I call it grungy soulful music. A lot of the way I've learnt to sing is underpinned in jazz and soul music, as well as like pop punk and grunge, people like Nirvana and Jeff Buckley, as well as Nina Simone, Ella Fitzgerald. So yeah, I try and intertwine all of those kind of things into my music. Yeah, a bit of everything. Rockier than people expect, but all in good fun.
What are your main influences?
I would definitely say like from the Paramore, Hayley Williams, Nirvana, Jeff Buckley, Nina Simone, D'Angelo, Donny Hathaway, soulful singers, but with also a bit of like attitude about them for sure.
So how would you define yourself as an artist?
Authentic. And I know that sounds like quite a big word to say about yourself, but I just actually strive to make things and do things that feel completely like me. I don't want to say a word in my songs that people wouldn't hear me say. I don't want to play a chord that people would be like, oh, that's a bit, you know, everything just really does come from me internally. And yeah, I'm just trying to make music that I like, and then hopefully people will like it too.
It's amazing. And what does it mean being a woman in jazz?
It means a lot. It means being kind of like, you know, standing your ground. It means being part of a few, unfortunately, at the moment, that is growing and kind of leading, you know, our trail in jazz, and especially as being an artist that's not straight ahead jazz, and I'm influenced 100% by it, but people would come to my gig and not think I play jazz. I feel good, especially also being a black woman in jazz. Yeah, I'm trying to just beat the odds with a smile on my face, have fun doing it.
And being alongside Women in Jazz Media.
Women in Jazz Media have been so amazing. I used to host a podcast with them. I've been working with them since the beginning. Fiona is one of my like true dearest supporters and friends. And yeah, I feel amazing being here for Women in Jazz Media, 100%.
Amazing, thank you so much. So I'll stay.
In the same evening, Jazz Cafe Posk and Women in Jazz Media hosted a tribute night called For the Love of Ella, featuring Vimla Rowe and Jeanette Mason. The performance explored music from Ella Fitzgerald's iconic songbook, spanning from her youth to her mature majesty. Taking on the role of Ella was world jazz vocalist Vimla Rowe, a beacon of success in her own right. Along with her own original tunes, which explore jazz and blues through to flamenco, folk, and Northern Indian classical styles, her riveting blend of styles and recreation of vocal jazz legends have resulted in sold-out gigs at Ronnie Scott's, as well as winning her an Indie Music Award for her self-titled EP, Vimala. Here are a few clips from the performance. Our third day at the festival, award-winning jazz photographer and Women in Jazz Media team member Tatiana Gorolovsky took a number of photography enthusiasts on a photo journey through time. She put together a wonderful lecture exploring the most prominent jazz photographers in history, highlighting how they impacted and redirected the art and profession. Tatiana Gorolovsky is one of the first women to have her work entered into the National Jazz Archive, and she was nominated for Photo of the Year by the Jazz Journalists Association. She has also been running around the entire festival as an official photographer, capturing incredible musical moments across London. I was so honoured to be able to speak to her about the workshop and her general experience at the Jazz Festival this year.
So how do you think the workshop went?
I didn't expect so much participation. It just turned out to the big party. That's I didn't think could happen. Amazing. Thanks for people who came.
Yeah, and it was really interactive and just everyone looked like they were having a good time.
I thought the lecture is more important because I prepared it and it's interesting facts. And I thought the photo shoot was just a small addition. But I think that was the main
part. No, the lecture was amazing as well. Like, how was it putting that together?
It's not only about jazz musicians. So I just let flow to different sides, you know, to have all of them inspiration from musicians and from friends, from some mentors. So that's why we had many people who are not just photographers in the lecture, but scientists and some portrait photographer that was mentor.
Because it all comes together.
Because it's how life goes. You know, it's not only just photography in the life. So they have many different sides, and that's amazing.
And how has your experience of the Jazz Festival been so far, generally?
That's my favorite 10 days
really?
In the year, yeah. Because I'm very busy running around the city and just, it's amazing.
Do you have a certain performance so far that's been your highlight?
Two performances this year. One, it's Take Six in Pizza Express. I didn't expect such a wonderful legends to see so close and to have to photograph them. And another gig, it was special and unusual, and it was in 606 Club, and it was the gig dedicated to one person. It's because it was in the schedule, Jason Yarde, he was in the schedule. He should play himself, but he had a stroke, unfortunately, during the stage performance in France. Oh. And so his friends just organized this concert. And it was each of them had a huge concert halls, and they just were together. It was amazing.
Wow. And that must have been really moving as well.
It was really moving, yeah. So they gathered some money to support him. Mm. He's recovering, but he needs money to recover.
Yeah. And so you mentioned a few like really big photographers. Which one is your main influence, would you say?
Herman Leonard is the main among all of them. And I like John Milley because he experimented a lot. And I like this technique to explore long exposure and multiple exposure. It's really nice. It's like improvisation.
Yeah. And how did you get into photography in the first place? Like, that must be a big question.
I used to play myself. I play piano. And I studied in the jazz school in Moscow, back in Moscow. And I had a lot of friends, musicians. So I started to photograph my kids, and I did some other things in life. And then it just came to one thing together.
Yeah.
Because I love jazz, I love music, and I love to listen to this music and to photograph.
Amazing.
And to cooperate with people too.
And what's it like being alongside women in jazz media today?
It's amazing. I'm glad they invited. So they are doing amazing stuff to support women in jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for
speaking.
Thank you.
Different story. Here, his photography is different. They're not sharp all the time. Because for him, it was important not just to show sharp image of the face of musician. What he wanted to show is a mood, an expression, what we feel when we listen to this music. And you see some of the pictures are blurry.
That was an audio clip from Tatiana's lecture, which led into the workshop where everyone came together to take photos and enjoy photography in an interactive and intimate space, and it was wonderful to see. Later on, after the workshop, we began to prepare for an electrifying performance by Laura Impalameni and her band, with a plethora of musical styles and genres under her belt, from swing to jive to reggae and afrobeats. She is currently a musical force to be reckoned with. Her multiple musical projects include Barnacles, an experimental jazz quintet, the Voodoo Love Orchestra, a Latin jazz ensemble, and an 11-piece Afro-jazz band, Yamaya, that reached the final 8 pans in the Glastonbury Emerging Talent Competition. I had the honour of interviewing Laura a month before her festival debut, where I learnt about her fascinating life experiences, and luckily enough she agreed to speak to me again, going more in depth about her music and compositional approach.
How did you prep for tonight? Like, do you have a pre-gig routine or...?
For me, normally my main prep is just doing a lot of exercise.
Yeah.
So I have done a shit ton of exercise today. I probably shouldn't swear on a podcast.
No, it's all right.
I've done a lot of exercise.
What kind of exercises do you...
I did an hour of handstand practice, and then I did an hour of calisthenics, and then I did an hour of strength training.
Nice.
That's how I prepare. Tried to burn off any nervous energy.
Yeah. And are you nervous or?
I feel a little bit nervous because it's the first time I've played my original compositions.
Yes.
Outside of.
And what's your ratio to like original content to covered content?
Half. So the first set is all. Compositions by jazz trombonists,
mm-hmm.
the wow. masters like J.J. Johnson or Melba Liston, Jimmy Nepper, and then the second set is entirely my original music.
And could you tell me a bit more about your original compositions that you're...
So, six of them that I'll be playing. So, I guess, yeah, to explain them, it's kind of like explaining my process. Sorry, I'm burping. It's all the sounds, burps and feedback. Maybe my burp made feedback. the mic's alive. So I started composing when I was doing my master's at Trinity Laban.
Yeah.
And composition wasn't optional. It used to be, but then the head of the course changed halfway through when I was studying, and he was very adamant that everyone had to compose. And I started trombone very late and music very late, so I can't play piano and I can't read music very well and I can't use Sibelius. So being told I needed to compose felt like, how the fuck am I going to do that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So for me, I started, basically my strategy has been like really fixed parameters. So the first thing I ever composed was like a straight up minor blues. At that time I was listening to a lot of Blue Train, Coltrane. So kind of like hard bop vibe, very much inspired by that album. So it was like having this thing of a blues is always 12 bars and there's a very strong harmonic like sequence.
Structure.
So it was like I just have to write a melody, and then for that I originally did it for 3 horns but then took it down to 2. So it was more about writing a melody and harmonizing it, because the rest, the groove and the changes, even though I embellished them, were pretty much set.
Yeah.
And then from there, I can't remember what I composed next. Oh, a tune that's very inspired by Ethiopian jazz music and their pentatonic scales they use. So I'm a big fan of Mulatu Astatke. I don't know if you know who he is, but like an Ethiopian jazz musician. So I wrote a tune very much in the sound of their pentatonic, which is like 1, 2, flat 3, 5, flat 6. So that was my parameter. And I was like, I'm going to do it in 6-8. And then I'm not going to tell you about each one, but it was like, okay, I'm going to write a ballad, or this one's going to be about time signature changes, or this one's going to be...
Like giving yourself a goal for each one.
Yeah, each one a set parameter. Yeah. So then I always like to play and listen to music that's minor, not major, but then I was like, well, I'm going to write a major tune.
Yeah.
And then I tried to harmonise it with negative harmony. I don't know if you know about that. Yeah. But using different strategies, basically, to like simplify. And so this one is about this thing, and rather than being like, where do you start otherwise with composition, it's like immense.
It could be anything. And how did you go about choosing your musicians to play with you?
Different things. I mean, I've played with all of them before. Me and Jack, the pianist, studied together at Trinity on the Masters, and Ed, who's on bass, I've played with quite a lot, but both Ed and Jack, the pianist, played one of my finals with me at Trinity, so they have met some of my originals before, because we've played them in that, and they played them very well, so it felt very appropriate to have people that kind of already knew the music. Same with Greg, who's on tenor. We play in a few bands together, and he'd also played in one of my finals and played my originals. And then Joost, who's on drums, I met him this summer. Really liked his vibe, really liked his playing. We just spoke a lot about our similar interests in like world music. I put world in inverted commas because it's all world music, but this idea of sort of playing more like Afro grooves, or he plays, I think, quite a lot of Arab grooves. We kind of connected over our musical interests being very similar, which made me feel like he'd be a good drummer, that because we have similar interests, that he'd get my concepts, which he definitely has. It's been very easy to translate them with him into reality.
Cool. Well, I'll let you get on with it. But thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Coming to the last day of our London Jazz Festival events, Charlotte Keefe graced us with her incredible knowledge and expertise in her very own improvisation workshop. The aim of the workshop was to create a safe space for women and non-binary individuals to open up to the freedom of improvisation, and all in all, be themselves. Charlotte Keefe is a jazz and improvised music trumpet professor at the London Performing Academy of Music, and a member of the Women in Jazz Media team. As well as teaching, she regularly performs as a soloist with her own ensemble, the Charlotte Keefe Quartet. It was wonderful to see women supporting women in a comforting and encouraging environment, and I loved speaking to Charlotte about why she thought the workshop was important and in some ways necessary in our current jazz scene.
Okay, hi. Hello. So how do you feel the workshop went?
Oh, it was really special. I feel a bit emotional now. I'm full of gratitude, really. It was so lovely to come together and share about where we are musically and with improvisation, our journey so far musically, and then just make music together and explore different ways of bringing ourselves to improvising, and exploring one sound, and then also giving ourselves permission to really let go with our voices and instruments as well. And also, it was super fun as well to see everybody exploring the space that we are, you know, playing in, improvising in. So I feel very very grateful and very happy.
And when did you get into free jazz and free improvisation?
I can't really pinpoint an exact moment. I definitely came in through the jazz door, for want of a better phrase. I always, there's such a, when I see people improvising in any sort of context, really, it's always very, there's a massive sense of just letting go and just playing and just being as you are in that moment. So I've said, there's a concert series. I'm now on the creative team for it, Mopa Mozo, which is the longest running concert series in the UK for improvised music. And they also have, there's a whole like archive of the live gigs on YouTube. And to be honest, when I was growing up, I came across a lot of the gigs, and seeing women like Sarah Gale Brand, who I mentioned actually in the workshop, really just letting go on her trombone. Those were are definitely turning points for me, because I'm very drawn to musicians that just let go on their instruments and really play them and really explore them and really grab it almost like by the scruff of the neck. That rawness. So
how do you prepare for a session like this? Like, how do you prepare for teaching people
last year I did it very much depends on, you know, for instance with the workshop today, it was very much on that sort of moment when everybody comes together, and I'm so grateful that people are very willing to share where they're at and why they've come to it, and you know, and then that can kind of, that sort of from that I can think about exercises and think about ways of how we're going to jump into making music together. But I mean, I think it's, I listen to in the moment. I mean, of course there's like, you know, there's things that I will pop out on paper of, you know, exercises that I've done before, and but that might not be appropriate in the moment. I think with improvising workshops and improvising, it's and teaching folks as well, it's very much in the moment, so it's sort of being very much
aware
and present. And if I'm feeling a bit nervy, the breath thing and my own breath, take breathing exercise, so I'm just really with that person or with the group in the moment to suggest, you know, what could happen next, and trust as well, myself as well as the group.
And why do you think it's important to have these like safe spaces to
it is really important. I think they're not there sometimes. Sadly, and I think I definitely, as I shared in the workshop, you know, I've been to several jam sessions where, although I did enjoy it, and I really wanted to be there, and I did get to play, but there have been, it's been very intense. It's been very, and it's not until you go to somewhere where it actually, I haven't felt intense, and I have actually felt seen and heard and invited to come and play. And then I suddenly realised, that was no one really spoke to me at that or invite, you know. So it's sort of, it's important. It's really important to have these safe spaces. And it would be lovely to, you know, do, you know, regular sessions like this where you know, folks who feel that they're not really seen or heard in that environment. As I shared in the workshop, it is really... I said it so many times, but I'll say it again, we all have a song to sing, and I really want people to know that, you know, they don't have to be this way or they don't have to know all the you know, all the chords or all the different tritone substitutions or all this stuff. You know, if you're into all of that, that's super cool, but you know, you are enough as you are, and that's the, in that moment, that's the message that I want to really get out to folks, that creative freedom.
for all.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. thank you so much for speaking to me.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
And here's a clip of the free improvisation session where the attendees were encouraged to let go of all their cares and roam free on their instruments.
Hand me the mic.
Our ultimate event saw the all-female London Gay Big Band take the stage. It was the perfect way to end such an inspiring week of events, embodying all of these ideas of representation, diversity and inclusivity in the jazz scene today. The Big Band was founded in 2011 and is made up predominantly, but not exclusively, of musicians from the LGBTQIA+ community. Since its creation, the band have become increasingly more popular, performing at multiple high-profile venues and events, such as last year's London Jazz Festival and London Pride. From this, the women in the band created an all-female subgroup, which is run by the fabulous Charlotte Keith. The band featured outstanding guest singer Lara DeBelda and guest star Lara Mehmet, a 13-year-old up-and-coming jazz vocalist who completely owned the stage. Before their fiery set, I spoke to Lara DeBelda and the band's drummer, Suzanne Cross, about being part of the London Gay Big Band and what the jazz industry is like for those within the LGBTQIA+ community.
Okay, cool. Hi. So first question, how did the all-female London Gay Big Band come about?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it was for last year's gig, to be honest. So we did a similar performance last year as part of the jazz festival, and again it was in partnership for Women in Jazz Media. Mm-hmm. So I think it was purely born out of that. So Fiona was speaking to Charlotte and me and asked, you know, thought it'd be wonderful to have a female version of the band, and that's kind of how it came about. So we're very grateful to Fiona for asking.
And you guys have been playing with the London Gay Big Band for generally?
Yeah, I mean, I started when it started, so I've been playing drums forever with them. But yeah, as Laura's saying, there's a lot of women that play in the band, and it was just great to get the women together to play for something like this tonight.
Yeah, and what kind of, I've heard a bit of in the sound check, but what kind of repertoire have you gone for? Like, what kind of repertoire do you usually go for?
Well, the big band does a mixture of things, because it depends partly on who they're performing with. So it tends to be kind of very, like, kind of gorgeously gay and triumphant anthems, you know, like Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli and kind of, yeah, very big kind of, and Cher and all those gorgeous things like that, because they do Pride festivals and all that kind of thing. But it can be anything from kind of soul and Stevie Wonder up to more jazzy stuff. Like tonight we're doing, I'd say we're doing a few more jazz numbers in tonight's gig, things like Honeysuckle Rose and blues with Route 66. Yeah,
and
mixture.
You've got a few of your own compositions.
Yeah,
then.
I have managed to sneak a couple of mine in. So yeah, two of mine originals. Yeah, it's all over and over time. So I'm really excited to do those. Yeah,
they sound amazing. How's it feel playing with an all-female group?
Yeah, it's fun, actually. We had a rehearsal last Sunday, and it was great being in an all-female space. We were talking about all sorts of fun things, like the menopause and stuff like that, which is sort of safe space to do things like that. But it's fun. It's a good vibe. I mean, I love playing with a big band. As Laura was saying, we did a big gig recently at Clapham Grand, Lies with a Z, so it's a massive production number, sort of big band jazz, you know, dancers, singers. And then it's great to sort of pare it right down to, you know, how many people? Seven piece band we've got on stage this time, and doing more of the classics, yeah, sort of the big band sort of jazz classics, as Laura's saying, you know, with some good fun upbeat numbers as well to give it a bit of variety. So yeah, it's great fun.
And more of a question, like, what is it like in the industry as not just as a woman but someone from the LGBTQ community? Like, how has it been as artists?
Gosh, what a question. Yeah. I think it depends on the space you're in. I mean, I think that's part of the beautiful thing, is that there are more spaces emerging, or there are more bands merging that have a queer element to them or are more openly queer, but there's still, you know, it depends on where exactly, especially in the jazz industry, where you are, because there are still a lot of spaces that are predominantly male-led, predominantly heterosexual male-led as well. But yeah, gradually things are changing. But yeah, I will say, like, even being at the jazz festival this week, there's not that many female jazz musicians I've seen compared to the men. So it's really wonderful to have a space like this where it's an actually all female jazz band. It doesn't actually happen that very, yeah, very often.
And everyone's representing. And like, how does it feel to be representing the LGBTQ community on stage, like at the London Jazz Festival? It's amazing.
It's great. I mean, yeah, we're just having a blast, really. Yeah, we're playing music we love, you know, with a group of friends. Yeah, because we've played for so long together, and it's just really nice to be able to play our music in front of such an accepting audience that hopefully we're going to love tonight and love the gig tonight. So it's really good fun.
Well, amazing. Thanks for speaking to me.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Fantastic week at the London Jazz Festival this year, and I would like to personally thank all the amazing musicians and creatives who took the time to share their stories and love of music with me. I would like to thank Toulouse-Lautrec for having us and the fabulous staff who catered to us all week, as well as the sound team. Women in Jazz Media is such an exciting force of nature in the jazz industry and is here to wake up and shake up the scene. Please consider donating to our GoFundMe so we can keep putting on these inspirational events and representing the people who need it most. I've been Isabel Marquez, and I want to thank you all so much for listening.